All right, I am Jess Fama. This is In Your Ear, and that was just a little taste of my band of the episode, Merzik, and that song was called Down Came the Sky off of their album, Spawned from a Nightmare. And in studio with me today, I would love everyone to give a warm welcome to the horror aficionado, fellow gore lover, and very talented music composer, Michael Tioli. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me. Good to be back.
Oh my God, so good to have you back. How are you?
Good.
Yeah? It's good to see you. It's been a minute since I've seen you.
It's been, quite a long time. Yeah.
You have a new addition to your family. Congratulations.
Thank you. I have a son, Rocco Wolfgang Tioli. Who is a year and a half now. It was nuts when he was born because he was 2 months preemie, so he was only 2 pounds, 12 ounces. So
wow.
It was an intense early going, but everything... Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah,
he's a healthy, growing boy now.
If it wasn't radio, but yeah.
I know. Next time, I'll throw it up on the pictures with Instagram.
Okay,
so people can see if you want to show him off.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We love to show off the little ones. Mine being four-legged and all, but still.
Right. Right.
He's just my sidekick. So you are ridiculously talented.
I just need
to say that. I've been friends with you for almost 8 years now or something.
Yeah.
I want to say it's been quite a while. Yeah. And your musical journey has taken you to a lot of different places. My question for you, we had spoke about this a few minutes ago before we started the show, but I think it's important to let the audience know exactly what a music composer is, aside from someone who's just arranging and making music. There's a lot more to it than that. And I think that job aspect, I feel, gets overlooked sometimes.
Right. Well, I think a lot of that depends on specifically what the gig is, what the job is. Like, there's so many different hats that composers wear depending on what genre and medium you're working on. So for me, I think, even though I do a bunch of different things, like I feel like the main two that I do the most is film and theater.
Mm-hmm.
And the approach to either of those is completely different. Where, so for a film, you know, I'll watch the film and, you know, I'll have a spotting session with the director. And today, so much of it is done, you know, remotely. Like, I find that even though I live in Los Angeles because of film music, I find more and more my clients are all over the place. Like,
right.
You know, it's actually almost like rare that I get to meet people. It's fun when I do now, which is kind of interesting. So, you know, we'll have a spotting session on the phone, go over notes, you know, so I can have a clear direction on what to do. And then I just start into it. And I like to compose a lot of times chronologically. And I go right to, not to get technical, I guess, right to my, like, sequencer most of the time.
Okay.
I'm not necessarily working in music notation right away. Sometimes I'll sketch some things out.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the scores I'm doing, because it's a lot of the times it's independent project, so it's not big studio budgets. A lot of times it's a sequence score with additional budget to hire some soloists to kind of come in, because that really livens up the whole score. And
Do you like to work more with live musicians as opposed to...
I mean, that's always the best. It's
right.
just for film, and each film I do, I try to get more and more in there, you know, and the samples that I use are really sophisticated, and they sound really, really good. Like, if you're listening to it, the average viewer wouldn't be able to tell that it's not, but... You know, there's certain things that it is hard to recreate. So for those, you know, and just as much as I can get budget for, I bring in live musicians.
Gotcha.
And that's when I'll go to the notation and, like, writing out the music and whatnot. So, but the approach in your brain is all actually producing the score as you write. because what you're hearing is no such thing as a demo anymore.
Right.
So like what I'm creating at
especially
the moment,
film.
Right. Yeah. And like what I'm creating at the, in the moment is what I'm going to perfect and send to the director as, you know, a quote demo. But if it's approved, that's like pretty much ready to go. That's like
gotcha.
Almost the final, you know, and then there's a revision process and whatnot. But that's kind of how I'm thinking is I'm really producing the music as we go. Whereas in theater, it's funny, actually lately I've been hired a few times, or quite a few times to score plays,
okay.
which that is actually more similar to the film, you know, cause you're, it's scoring, it's you're supporting what's happening. Whereas when I write a musical, that's very different, because you're one of the writers. You're one of the main, you know.
Right. You're not just
people.
Writing the music. The music oftentimes is telling the story.
Yeah. And
right.
for that, I always have a live band. That's one of the things that I, you know, it's one of my passions is to really fight for having live musicians. And because I think that's what keeps the show fresh night after night.
Absolutely.
Because there's that element of improvisation. A lot of the For me, I do mostly rock musicals or at least rock oriented
yep.
musicals. So for I
we're
write.
Gonna be talking about those that are getting off the hook. Okay.
So I definitely you know write with that in mind and the live players in mind. So for that, I go right to the notation. So because
gotcha.
I know it's gonna be played. Whereas in film, if there are certain things that aren't gonna be actually played by live musicians, for me, I don't you know necessarily bother writing it all out.
Gotcha.
For me, I'm a guitarist, but I'm not, you know, when people ask what I play, I always say, well, I'm a composer first, you know, because a lot of the stuff that I write is almost more difficult or what I want to hear is more intense than I have the ability to play.
Just
so I
guitar.
Write. Yeah. Like I write for any instrument. I always try to write for really good players and go out there and get the best players. But at the same time, when I'm working on scores in my office, my guitar abilities are usually just fine for a lot of that stuff.
Right.
But if it's like a song that I want like a killer guitar solo on, I have a few guitar guys around town, or I should say around
yeah.
the country. Like, one thing that's really interesting with just everything being remote is a lot of my musicians don't even literally come in. I send them the tracks. I send them the sheet music, the click track, everything, and they send me back the file. So I have a guy, Sandro Friedrich, I hope I pronounced that right, who does all my woodwinds, and he's in Switzerland. And,
wow.
And this
shout
guy,
out to Switzerland.
Shout out to Switzerland. And Sandro, like Sandro, I think his website's, I want to say it's powerflute.com or I shouldn't quote that, but it's something like that. And he has over 200 kinds of different flutes.
Wow.
Like different ethnic
flutes. I
didn't even
know he made 200 different kinds.
Oh, yeah. You know, like all different things. And, you know, so I go to him because it's like, you're the expert. I want this to sound as good as it can be. So a score I did called Nishima a few years ago, which I just released
I
the soundtrack
just, yep,
to.
We're talking about it. I got it in
yeah.
my notes.
Yeah,
I got it
so
in my notes here.
I just released the soundtrack to that. And so for that, I wrote for flute, bass flute. I did deduk, bass deduk. These are all things that I like wrote specific parts for. But then I had a bunch of time where I wanted woodwinds, but I didn't specify the exact specific type of ethnic flute I wanted because I did a mock-up of it to give an idea of the sound. But, you know, basically it's like, Sandra, you're the expert. You know, you choose what you think this is going to feel best on.
And
you know?
That's a great way to look at it. To be open like that can bring in so many different possibilities that you couldn't
yeah.
have even thought of.
No, totally. You know, it's when you hire someone or collaborate with someone, you know, you're trusting them and their musicianship, you know, and
right.
you really want to allow them to use the full, you know, power they have, you know, and their talent, you know, just like in when I'm writing for theater, you know, like for example, for a rhythm section, when you're writing for a rhythm section and you're writing for like bass, right? When you're writing for bass guitar, you want to be kind of careful to not overwrite sometimes. You know, you kind of start up the groove and everything, and maybe, and a lot of times there are specific things that I write out, like every single note. But other times, you know, if it's this rock groove, once it gets going, you kind of want to let the experts do it, you know, so you can write chords and slashes and hits and different things,
right,
and let them do their thing, because, you know, you're hiring them because they're a great bass player, and you want to get as much of them and as much as their musicianship. Just let them do their thing, you know, and not micromanage, you know.
Right.
So I'm a big believer in that. And
well, especially as musicians, yeah, they're so creative anyway.
Right.
It's kind of like if you give them that opportunity to be creative, they're going to, they, you know, might just blow you away and come out with something really great.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm always, you know, looking to let someone bring themselves, you know, and into it as much as they can, you know, as long as it's, you know, in line with what I'm trying to do. And, you know, a lot of times they'll do stuff and I say, you know, that's not what I want. And,
fail.
You know, right. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, so, and, you know, and that happens a fair amount too, but you know, you for the really great things, you would never would have got there if you hadn't, you know, given them that
freedom.
Shoulder.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So Nishima just got released. You just released that soundtrack.
Yeah.
Walk me through that a little bit, what that was like and what this music is like.
Yeah, well, that Nishima is a really cool movie directed by Tommy Friedman. He's out of San Diego, but he's in LA a lot too. But he's one of the rare people I've got to meet and have meetings with
in person.
And yeah, it's interesting because it's an indie kind of low budget epic fantasy. So if you think about that for a second, that's almost like an independent Lord of the Rings, you know, like,
yeah,
that style. It's like, how do you do that with not very much money? And these guys just I think it started off a lot smaller than it became, and they just, you know, did their homework and got investors. And it was always like, you know, they got to a point with what they could afford, but then they saw like, oh, we just need this little bit more to make it so much better. And they just went out and got it and kind of went bit by bit by bit. And that kind of happened, and it just kept growing in the people on it. Just there's a lot of real pros in that. So, and it's taken a long time to make that movie because of that. Like I wrote it and actually produced the score 2 years ago.
Wow.
So I think it was I think it was 2 years ago, and it just had a Los Angeles premiere a few months ago.
Awesome.
You know, because there were so many, you know, digital shots and everything. But anyway, so for that, it's a very eclectic, fun score, because they really wanted it to be kind of like an East meets West, because it takes place in this world where, you know, it's almost like a, yeah, I don't even know how to describe it. It's its own world, and they wanted it to have a worldly feeling, like you didn't know exactly where it was, you know. So I used a lot of woodwinds on that, a lot of Eastern woodwinds, a lot of Diduc, a lot of Indian instruments, like Eastern Indian instruments. We had a live sitar on that. We had live tablas, yeah, on that. But we also had like Native American flutes and African percussion, and, you know, so I really tried to blend it up. And of course, there's a lot of orchestral things as well, big orchestral sound. And yeah, it's a really fun score. There's vocals on it. We had a live choir for a few tunes, and it was just a really, really fun score to produce, and I'm really proud of it. And you know, I just, when I learned that they were doing a release or a premiere, I said, man, I should just release the score, you know. So I kind of got it together, and, you know, it's available on CD Baby and iTunes and all that stuff.
And we can find all the links to those two on michaeltioli.com.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
I checked out your website. I saw. And then you did a lot of stuff with Sacred Fools.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were working with that theater company.
I'm a company member at Sacred Fools, mm-hmm, and I've worked on a lot of shows there. Carnival, that we talked about last time.
Yep,
I wrote that show
awesome
with Joe Freya. And Right now, what I'm working on for them is a show called Skullduggery, the musical prequel to Hamlet. And that is written and composed by Michael Shaw Fisher. And we've worked together a lot where, so I am arranging it and doing additional music and am the music director. So the same things that I did on Doomsday Cabaret and Exorcistic. And Michael and I also wrote a show together where I wrote the music called The Werewolves of Hollywood Boulevard, which is very fun that we're hoping to revamp soon.
I just have to stop you really quick because... I need everybody to know that I've personally gone and seen a few of your shows and I've enjoyed every single one because you guys know to make it's, you know, a lot of them are darker, like horror-esque, you know, you can't say, I don't think really horror, but you know, horror-esque, but they're just so much fun. And the songs that you guys generate, you know, while you're doing it, I'm just like, oh my God, it just, they're funny, you know, they flow with the actual storyline.
Right.
One of my favorites though that you did was the Exorcistic.
Mm-hmm.
That was hilarious.
We're hoping to bring that back as well. You know, maybe hopefully next year, next Halloween, maybe. We're not sure yet.
That was a great show. And yeah, total takeoff Exorcist. And I mean, it was like three plays in one.
Right.
Right. I'm remembering that correctly. Right. Because it was.
Well, it was like a low budget. It's essentially Exorcistic is a low budget theater company they're struggling and trying to make money, so they decided to put on a musical of The Exorcist. But in doing so, the lead, you know, actually gets possessed.
Yeah.
But they don't know if she's actually possessed or if she's method.
Playing the part, right.
So, like, it's that was a really fun one. And for Skullduggery, we're doing, so we're teaming up again in that way. And that's what we're working on right now. And it's really amazing what Michael has done because he has... The script is just incredible, the story where he flips the way you feel about every character in Hamlet. He just totally turns it so you feel like the opposite, or for many characters, I should say.
Interesting.
Yet, and I can't give away how.
Please don't.
But yet, everything in Hamlet supports what he created in Skullduggery. So, absolutely everything is supported. It doesn't change anything. You know, it doesn't change the future. Hamlet all happens just as it was written. It just, what came before it changes how you feel about different characters. And I'm really...
It's the prequel, right?
That's the prequel. Yeah. So it deals, you know, a lot with like Hamlet Senior and Claudius and Gertrude and there's some new characters as well. That is next June. It's opening, but yeah, and I'm arranging it now. I just kind of hit Act Two, and I'm going to be orchestrating it for a really unique ensemble. That's going to be my influence for it, I don't know if it's going to end up sounding exactly like this, but it's almost like a Tom Waits meets David Lynch. I want it to be kind of like very eclectic. And so the instrumentation, because it's going to be done at Ticker Fools in a small theater and for budgetary reasons, we're not going to use mics for the singers.
Oh.
And we actually did a show that I played. I had nothing to do with writing or arranging it, but I was, I was just a musician and I played tuba and bass, and it was fun. It was the first show I've just been a musician, and it was so much fun. And they just got nominated for 9 Ovations and have won a ton of awards this show. But that was called The Behavior of Brodus. And they did their show without any mics, and it worked really, really well. And being sitting in the pit, you know, I was able to see how that worked. And really the key to it is you can't have a rock drum set if you do that. So what I'm going to do is basically it's going to be guitar, bass, a percussionist, but I think he's going to use a lot of cajon and different hand percussion, maybe djembes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the fourth member of the band is going to be a multi-instrumentalist who plays mini marimba and imbira, an array imbira, which is if you've seen Imogen Heap plays one, it's almost like a glorified kalimba, but it has this amazing sound that has never been in a musical before like this, as far as
awesome.
I know. So it's going to be still kind of like rock at heart, but it's not going to be as much as, you know, a lot of my stuff tends to be like heavy.
Yep.
So it's not going to be quite as heavy, but it's still going to be full. I think the guitar being there is still, you know, going to make it pretty rock. We're going to be dealing with a lot of, you know, delays and slides and different things to really fill the room and make it feel really big, but without, you know, also maintaining volume so you can still hear the singers clearly, because that's what tells the story.
Right,
so
right. Absolutely.
If you don't have mics, you gotta be careful.
Gotta project.
Yeah. So I'm specifically writing it so that, you know, it could be done without mics.
Awesome.
So.
That's super interesting. I'm excited to see another performance from Sacred Fools Theater.
Oh, yeah. They're very killing excited. It. They're just, they've had hit after hit. And, you know, they had a show go to Pasadena Playhouse since last time we talked. And, you know, they a bunch of different things. So yeah, they have tons of great stuff going on.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm going to take a quick break right now. I need to introduce my band of the episode, Merzik, and you listened to a few of their songs
I did.
Played for you.
Yeah,
they're pretty awesome. Groovy, right? I love
yeah,
them.
Totally.
They like to consider themselves a theatrical operatic rock band, which
perfect.
They definitely are, right? I mean, it's. You'll hear in the interview that you're about to hear how we chatted about how I'm pretty sure Tim Burton would like to have them maybe score one of their one of his films. But right now I am going to play for you some of my interview with them. And then I am going to play a song. It's called Elves on X. And it's exactly what you think. It's about elves on X. So, yeah. Enjoy. All right. I am here with Merzik.
How's it going?
Great.
Hello.
Hello. So proper. I love it. All right, you guys just played a badass show at the Viper Room. Thank you for all the energy, first of all. I really appreciate it, and I'm sure everybody else did. I wouldn't have come back to see you guys and have you here if I didn't obviously think that your band is fucking awesome.
Well, thanks.
I love it. Symphonic metal horror is what you put your genre as.
Ish, yeah.
Ish. I love that you came up with your own genre, because I don't think anybody else has that as a genre. You've created your own.
We've been trying to just figure out what to actually call it, instead of just, like, progressive alternative rock.
Yeah.
Because I like it's got a lot of color to it, and when you watch, there's a lot of visuals, you know? Or people say you see stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So, actually, around LA here, the quickest thing that gets people's attention is I just say it's like Tim Burton rock.
Tim Burton rock.
Right.
I like that.
Straight to the point, and they're like, what? And they get it all, you know, it's like a marketing thing. It's like, it kind of is, because it's inspired from like everything that we like from his movies.
I have to say, actually, there's one song in particular I feel like you stole a little bit, and you gave a little bit of homage to Beetlejuice.
Ah, yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. Am I correct on saying that?
Elves on X.
Elves on X, yes, yeah. Yes. I noticed that. I was like,
Elvis.
this is like Beetlejuice right now. Yeah. And I love it. I love it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a good time.
What image do you think that your music conveys to people?
I have to say the same answer.
Okay.
I think it's a different answer for me.
Yeah.
For me, it's just taking something that's brutal and dark, like the worst nightmare that you've ever had, and turning it into something positive and beautiful.
Yep. I love that.
So taking the bad and turning it into good.
It was just like the record is, it's spawned from a nightmare and lost in a dream.
Oh, is that the whole name of the album?
It was going to be.
Okay.
It's kind of an underlying thing, but the record is spawned from a nightmare.
Yeah.
We do have a song called Lost in a Dream. But it's like a beauty spawned from a nightmare.
I've been calling you guys like a swanky evil carnival.
That's cool. I like that.
You remind me of if the Cludio brothers were going to go and redo Killer Clowns from Outer Space. They should come to you guys to have you do the soundtrack for it.
Hey, call them and then tell them to call me.
You know what? I actually have their card. I saw them at Monsterpalooza.
Perfect.
So I will put that word in if they do Killer Clowns 2. Because, I mean, who doesn't love that movie?
That's a good one.
Right? Thank you. And last year, you released your first one. Like, we were just talking about Spawn from a Nightmare. That was your first full-length album. Because your original one before that was an EP. But what I found really interesting is that the two of you, Brian and Anthony, you guys both produced and recorded everything.
Everything.
And
Brian tracked. Brian played the drums, bass, and guitar on the record. I played all the keys and sang everything, obviously, and we did some backups. I had some friends come in do like strings and some miscellaneous stuff, but it was just him and I. You know, I wrote a bunch of the stuff, and then he came in and where we collaborated and finished it all off together, and then it, yeah, that was it. It was just the two of us, pretty much just two
and
of us,
over so. A 4-year span, I read.
Yeah, there was a little break there, and kind of took a lot out of us. We were all busy with some stuff and, you know, going through some personal things and this and that, as we all do.
Life happens.
Right. But it made us, you know, what we are now, and it's tighter and stronger, and it's cool.
And from your EP to that album to now, I actually got a preview of what your newest songs are going to be sounding like. Mm-hmm. How do you feel you guys have changed throughout and where you've brought your music to now?
Well, my answer to that, because I'm focusing the sound on kind of crossing over a bit, is the biggest word is crossing over.
Okay.
The music now is definitely is different than everyone's usually used to. Is out there, progressive, mm-hmm. Theatrical, and which we love. That's why we do it.
Yeah.
But I'm writing a few things that are just kind of like, it's a little bit more so people can kind of really, you know, kind of like understand. I don't know.
Help him, Brian. He's drowning.
He's drowning here.
Help him dance a little bit. Well, I mean, I get it, but I want somebody, you know, outside perspective.
As the producer side of things, I guess I would just say that, you know, we've tried to take it and make it something that everybody can understand and resonate with, rather than just musicians.
Right.
All the technical stuff and all the shredding and everything. It's still in there to a certain aspect, right. But the real core of the song is more of like a groove rather than something that's trying to be impressive. And I think that comes with just growing up as well. Like, the more you play music, the more you realize, oh, I don't have to be all up in people's faces to actually impact them. You
right.
know what I mean?
And yeah, I will say, I mean, I only heard the one song that you guys did, so I don't know how many you have, like,
right
now, like, in your bag. But that one song, even, it just seemed to feel a lot deeper than the music that you were playing earlier tonight.
It's like what he said, we're starting and focusing the music around, like, a groove, a beat, something that makes you feel rhythmically like you feel it.
Yeah.
And then after that, we kind of build upon that, and I am, you know, writing, you know, the lyrics and the music kind of on the side around that. But it's not just like, let's just be crazy and all over the place and da-da-da-da. It's really focused on, you know, making the crowd and the people, as far as ourselves and the people that we're playing for, feel it. It makes them move, you know,
yeah,
a different way.
I have a, you know, curious smile on my face right now, because actually that was like a question that I was just going to get into, because I feel like every song that you guys play has a theme and like almost it tells a story in a way. And so I was going to ask, like, do you think that your lyrics are more influenced by the music, or if the music is more influenced by your lyrics?
It's always and usually the music first.
Musically driven,
yep.
Right. It just because it sounds so much like a story almost, that it
yep.
feels like it was already written and meant to be,
yep.
like with the music.
Totally.
Once we start, the song almost writes itself. Once we start with the, you get that first melody in your head, and then yep. the whole thing just kind of
grows,
erupts out of there without us having to really, you know, think about it. We're just kind of chasing what we're hearing.
Yeah, just organically happening, as
yeah,
opposed
exactly.
to trying to like fit a puzzle piece.
Kind of like how go. We want the crowd to be, or the listener, I would say the listener, we want them to hear the music, and then we want it to paint a picture for them.
Yeah.
So same for me as, and same for us, is when we write it, I listen back, and then it's, what am I seeing? What am I
yeah.
feeling? What am I hearing? And then we kind of write the lyrics to kind of go with that.
Right.
And, we kind of paint our own picture with it, but then it, you know, leave it open to them to also decipher what they want, you know. Salem, how do you feel about playing the music?
Now that you're a newer member.
It's a lot of fun playing this music. Yeah. It's definitely a lot of fun. Feels like you're like in a dark carnival.
That's what I was saying,
and,
right?
Yeah.
yeah.
and so I can't wait to start hitting the road.
I know. I'm looking forward to that as well for you guys. Let me ask you a random question right now. At a carnival, since we've been talking about it, what's your favorite food, ride, game to play? What is that? Tell me. I want to know.
Clay.
Funnel cake.
Funnel cake. Oh, for sure. Funnel
cake. The House of Horrors.
Rides are dangerous.
They are dangerous.
I want to see elephants doing tricks.
Oh, you're talking about a circus.
Elephants on parade. The elephants on parade.
Huge carnival
with elephants.
Okay, like a circus carnival thing.
Kinda. Fried dough's way better. The circus is intense.
That's the next the name for our next record is called The Circus is Intense.
I mean, no, you're not. No, you're not.
Why not though? You know.
I mean, you could actually. You know what? I think as a gimmick, what would be kind of cool with you guys, you should get up there in like a ringmaster uniform type thing. You know what I mean? Do you really?
You missed it earlier.
You weren't in it. I was here. This is what you were wearing. Don't lie to me.
You didn't see my top hat.
I need you to be wearing those red and white striped pants with the suspenders.
Well, no, I have the black and silver
ones. I know.
Ones.
You wore those at the Loaded show. I remember.
I'm just a little loaded then.
So. I'm just saying. All right. But I just wanted to ask that random question. But one last question for all of you.
Yeah.
What's the next thing for Merzik?
On the big horizon, looking for a tour. We're doing a tour hopefully pretty soon here. And in talks with some people about everything that comes with all of that. Music videos are on the way.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm excited to see those.
Music videos are on the way. New music, EP, touring, yada, yada, yada.
Awesome. Thank you so much, you guys. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we are back. I am Jess Famous. This is In Your Ear, and that was Merzik, Elves on X. I hope you guys enjoyed it. You can find them at merzik.com. You can go on to Facebook and find them Facebook/Merzik Band and on Instagram, all of those fun places you can find them. And yeah, so make sure you go to their site, pick up their new CD, Spawn from a Nightmare. Has the songs that I just played for you here and a few more that I'm going to play for you later. But in studio, Michael Tioli, he has not run away. I have not scared him. You're hard to scare anyway because you love horror.
I do. Which but is, I like getting into it. I'm easy to scare, I think.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. You like to be scared.
I think, yeah, I like buying into the world.
Gotcha.
You know?
I agree with you. I 100% agree with you, especially yeah. if I'm going to a, if I'm going to a haunted house, I don't want to play the, oh, I'm too to get scared. I'm not going to, like, I like that feeling of what's around the corner.
Well, I watch a lot of, like, older horror movies, too. It's funny. Yes. I've seen, so I was telling you earlier, so I just saw my 400th horror film.
Yes.
And, but it's funny, not that many of them are recent. So,
can you,
like,
just tell me right now what your 400th film was?
It was actually a film from 1958 called The Screaming Skull.
Please tell me it had a screaming skull in it.
Oh, of course.
Awesome.
Of course.
Okay.
But, you know, so stuff like that and, you know, the older things that by today's standards aren't necessarily, you know, one might not say they're as scary or built as scary. I think really a lot they are, but you need to put your brain in the world of 1958
right.
or whatever it is. Like,
I mean, well, same thing if we were now to watch Psycho for the very first time.
I was
time.
Just going
to
bring that up
because yeah.
My wife is... feels I shouldn't call her out here. She's gonna be mad.
Oh,
at me,
come
but,
on, call her out.
But,
we're all
but
friends
she,
here.
It's just one of the things that I pick on her about because she or the only thing I should say is you know there's times in Psycho that she finds funny,
mm-hmm.
and for me like she thought the scene in the car going down in the muck is like kind of ridiculous because of the timing. And I'm like, that is the single most horrifying part of the whole movie, you know, for me. And it's just like, if you look at it looking to either make fun of it or just, you know, by today's standards, because yeah, I mean, there's a cheese element that wasn't cheese then,
but it wasn't cheese then
now.
Exactly.
So you have to kind of put yourself in the mindset of wanting to buy into that world and seeing it for what the filmmakers
right.
saw it as. So I think Psycho's the perfect example because Psycho's horrifying,
yes.
you know. But you have to want to go there,
right?
You
right.
know, if you don't want to, you know, and it's fine that one wouldn't, but
absolutely. Yeah. But what's the point of getting into a horror movie if you don't want to get into it?
Right.
That's
right.
all I have to say. But what I find more frightening all the time are real life, like, people, like, that are
right.
just psychomaniacs who want to kill people. Because in real life, that's really,
right.
you know, the case of some people.
Yeah.
So it's,
no, Henry messed me up. Have you seen?
I have not seen Henry. I've
Portrait
heard.
Of a Serial Killer. It's really good. It's really, it's, but it, but that night was, yeah. That's it. It's an intense movie. I don't recommend it for all of you, but those of you who are, like, big horror people who can take that kind of thing, it's fantastically done.
I'm sorry, that's gonna have to go on. I've been watching a new movie every night because it's October.
It's intense. So. It's not a fun one. Like October, I like to do like fun horror movies.
I go all around in October. I go everywhere. Like it doesn't
right.
matter as long
okay.
like as long as it's in the horror realm. I'm like, I will go there. It just depends
right.
on the day. Do I
right.
want to get scared tonight? Do I want to just, you know, maybe a little Nightmare Before Christmas today, you
right.
know, things like that. I have to, because when I get really, really built out, I got to bring it down a notch. And then
right.
like the next day, I'm like, I can't get scared tonight.
right.
So, yeah. But one of the biggest reasons I had you on today was not just for your musical talents, but for your knowledge and your passion and love for Halloween and all things scary and horror.
Yeah.
So... Dun, dun, dun. Hold on. I mean, maybe I should do the wah-ha-ha. I think that's more appropriate on this one. Wah-ha-ha.
Right.
I have a quiz.
Oh, no.
That I put together.
That's truly horrifying.
So, yeah. okay. I mean, wah-ha-ha.
Right.
Are you willing to play?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. Okay, so everything here is obviously all Halloween related movies.
Okay.
I have songs. I have things for you. Oh my
Uh-oh.
God.
I'm bad under pressure. So we'll see.
So excited. All right. First question.
Okay.
For not $100. This one I think you'll know. Name the clown in Stephen King's It.
Pennywise.
Ding, ding, ding. Look at that. Yeah. First one out the box. All right, you got one right.
Okay.
You got one right. Let's see. This one I purposely picked because I was like, he should know this. In The Exorcist, when Reagan plays with the Ouija board, she makes the question, who makes the answers?
Captain Howdy?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's a song in Exorcist.
I know.
I think I would have forgot that if I, yeah.
So, I was thinking of that when I was picking the questions.
It's a very,
like,
very fun
see.
Tune.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to switch this one up.
Okay.
I'm going to play a song for you here. I'm going to pull up the mic so that other people can hear it as well. I want you to name this song. What movie did it come from?
That is Beetlejuice.
Oh my God, you got it so quick.
Well, I'm a film composer, so no. I was.
But no one picks it up until.
No. Because this is the opening track.
Yes.
So, like, when I was a kid, I listened to this on cassette tape in the car over and over again. When other kids were listening to, like, Guns N' Roses and Red Hot Chili Peppers, which I got into much later when I was in college and now I love, I was listening to film scores like Raiders of the Lost Ark and that and Addams Family. So, yeah, I know my Beetlejuice score, or I did, but, yeah. But
all right,
yeah.
So far you're 3 for 3.
All right.
You're doing good.
I'm feeling good.
You're doing good.
We can do this forever.
All right.
All right.
Name the only survivor
uh-oh.
In The Evil Dead.
This has to be a trick question. So I haven't seen Evil Dead in a while because I saw it so early. Is Ash?
Yes.
Okay.
I was like, come on. Okay. I know you know this
all
one.
Right, all right.
Okay.
I was like, I can't remember one other name of anybody else.
He's the only one that survives. Evil Dead. Okay. Cool. Name the film. This quote is from, who's going to believe a talking head? Get a job in a sideshow. I know it's a little bit difficult, but if you think
I might need
it.
Multiple guesses for this because there's plenty of films I know that have. I mean, is it Reanimator?
It is.
Oh, okay. Sweet.
It is. Right. Look at you.
It's like talking head.
You're on fire. Well, yeah, that's why I was like, it's like that one. Okay. You know, I'm
right,
like,
right.
Because I can't. I mean, off the top of my head, that's the one that I think I would think of. First. No. All right, let's try. I'm gonna try another music.
Okay.
Music song with you here. Another theme to a horror movie. Any ideas? I'll give you a hint. It has been remade just recently, in fact.
I think my streak has come to an end.
There. Oh,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Poltergeist. That's 80s, but isn't it?
It was an 80s. That's that's why I was like, wait, is it 80s? I thought it was like late 70s.
No, yeah. I think it's 80s, but yeah. I've been
stomped Michael Tioli. Woo! All right, well, I'm still
and I love
gonna,
that movie
I
too.
Still got a couple more questions for you.
I haven't
you.
Seen the remake. Have you?
I did.
Is it?
I didn't hate it.
Okay.
Hate it.
But not worth it, really.
I what I did like is how they updated it for now.
Okay.
I will say that they definitely used things in the now that they didn't have then, which I thought was cool.
Okay. I hope you don't mean CGI when you say that.
No, but, okay. I mean, for instance, like we have cell phones now.
Got it.
You know, things like that. So I thought that
so
was
so many
cool.
Movies that you watch that you're just like this whole movie would. Not exist if there was cell phones.
Absolutely, right? Because you ain't going to cut the line to my cell phone. I'm calling
right.
the cops.
Right.
You psycho killer.
Right.
Okay, let's see. We just talked about this.
Uh-oh.
Who said it? We all go a little mad sometimes.
We all go a little mad sometimes. Oh, and we just said it? Oh, shoot.
I'll go a little.
Oh, Psycho.
Yes.
Right. Sorry. Yeah. My brain, just when I hear that, goes Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I have to like break it and then just be like. Ah.
No, horror. We're on horror right now.
Well, for me, I see them. Those are the same.
Okay, let's see if you. I think you should get this. Charlie Brewster, Evil Ed, and Peter Vincent are characters in what quirky 80s vampire flick?
Fright Night.
You had that like when I said the first name. I saw it in your face. You're like, I got this.
Right.
I got this. All right, let's see. guess this theme.
It's funny how I'm struggling with the music ones.
I kind of love it, though. I'm not going to lie.
Hold on.
Do you want a hint? Four of them were made. But the first one, there was no other movie like it yet.
I feel like this, because it's definitely modern, like I said, I'm not as good with the modern ones, and I feel like this might be one of those franchises I just haven't seen yet.
You've seen it.
I've seen it?
100%.
Like, is the first one in the 2000s, would your guess be? Or you think it's 90s?
I would say it was either late 90s or early 2000s. I'm trying to think when the last one came out, because the last one was 10 years from the first one. Or 20. No, 10.
Oh, it could only Scream. Be
10. Yes.
Okay. I knew that because of the music, right?
Absolutely, because of the music. All right. What does Nancy pull out of her dream to prove that Freddy is real?
The hat.
Yes. Yeah. See, you're on a roll. You got these. You're like, Jess, you can't stump me anymore. All right, I'm going to do one more song here, just because, honestly, I love this one, and it's one of my favorites. You'll know it.
Is this...
It's not a movie.
Oh, it's not.
Well, I mean, they have two movies.
So that threw me off now.
There's two movies, but it was a show. Oh, I love that. I'm stumping you. Everybody in the audience is mad at you right now, Michael.
Weird.
I'm going to have to tell you.
Okay.
Tales from the Crypt.
Okay. See, now Tales from the Crypt is not, the TV show is not out, at least for me, it's not streaming. And when I was, my parents, despite the 400 horror films, were really, really strict when it came to that kind of stuff. And I think that's partially why, because it was, I was deprived of that for so long that once the chains were off,
like,
I just
I'm
went
going crazy.
You know? So, so Tales from the Crypt, when it was actually on, I think was actually kind of like, what was that, late 80s, early 90s? My parents probably wouldn't let me watch
it. Had to have been in the 90s, because I don't think I would have been able to watch it had it not been.
Okay.
I would have to say 90s.
Okay. Yeah. We didn't have cable until I was it a cable show?
Yeah. I think it was HBO.
All right. Well, that's my excuse.
All right.
People out there. So, yeah.
Well, if you weren't familiar with it, you wouldn't have remembered that song. But that's one of those songs for me that
I don't
I'm
think
like,
I was
yes.
that into Demon Knight. It was okay.
It was more funny.
It was okay. Yeah.
It was campy.
Is that the one that they're like in a, well, yeah.
In a hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. That's the one. All right. Last question for you. Name the film that this quote is from. One thing about living in Santa Clara I never could stomach, all the damn vampires.
And it's a film? Oh, gee. Gonna get me with the last one. Let's see. It's not Dust Till Dawn, is it?
No. Before that.
This is an older one.
Think of a young Kiefer.
It just went the Interview with the Vampire. No.
No.
I'm just kidding. No. He's joking.
He's joking.
You know, Santa, in whenever that was.
Santa Clara.
Yeah. I guess I haven't seen this one.
The Lost Boys.
The Lost Boys is the one that is should be on my list that I have not seen.
Oh, well, look at that. That needs to be on your list.
I need to do. I think I also, it's one of those ones that I started like ages ago and just never picked back up. But I will.
That
I'll
has
do
to
that.
Go on your list.
It will.
All right, I'm going to give you one more bonus question because for playing, you get a prize.
Okay.
However, if you get this bonus question, you're going to get another prize.
Okay.
All right. We're going to do another song.
Okay.
I know you're going to get this one, though. Right. I know it. I'm fully confident.
This is a film?
Yes.
This is Rocky Horror Picture Show.
You got it. What song?
The Time War.
You got it.
Oh, yeah. I used to go to a theater, the Seacoast Rep in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, every summer. And I think I saw it like 9 times every summer. You know.
They used to do one by me where you actually would go into the theater and like get dressed up and you would sing out loud with...
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what you do for Rocky Horror. And they still do it here in town every Saturday night. But the theater I used to see it in New Hampshire, it was actually, there wasn't a screen. It was like theater.
Like
theater.
A theater.
And it was awesome. Live band. It was amazing. But I still love doing, what's the one called here? Is it Sins of the Flesh?
I haven't been. I would love to go.
Oh, man. Every Saturday at midnight at the Newark. Like every Saturday.
I'm going to have to go.
Oh, it's great.
It's in my calendar now.
It's really fun. And there's a few different groups. So if I got that wrong, and Sins of the Flesh is actually another one, and they're called something else. I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
It's all right. We'll figure it out. All right, you win.
We should go see both of them.
Michael, you win.
All right.
Whoop, whoop. All right. You get four playing and being an awesome sport, and I really, really appreciate it. You get to take home with you my Band of the Episode, Merzik. Their
all right.
CD.
Very cool.
So
I
here
really
you go. That's spawned of it from a nightmare.
Thank you. I really like the song that you played. That was
awesome.
Great.
And you get to pick from Famous Box.
Uh-oh.
You never know what you might find in here. All right, reach in.
Oh, geez.
Four, what do you got?
I don't know. The Seven Tongues?
Ooh, Seven Tongues. That's one of my bands that I had on, Devil in Drag.
Cool.
You got two great CDs to take home with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thank you for playing.
Yeah.
Get to come on and get free stuff. I mean, who doesn't like that?
There you go.
Well, yeah. Not free. I made you work for it, technically.
That's true.
Technically,
that's true.
I did make you work for it. I won't take that away from you, I promise. Okay, so actually, on that note, I, really quick, am going to play another song from Merzik.
All right.
This song
do
is
called...
Do I
have to open this up so you can play it?
Yeah, we'll open that up. We'll open up your CD. We'll plug it in and play it. Okay. This is Shock the Monster, again, off of Spawn from a Nightmare from Merzik. Enjoy, and we will be right back with some of our favorite Halloween moments.
I'm
All right. That was Shock the Monster from Merzik. And you can listen to that now whenever you want, Michael, because you got the new CD.
Yeah.
Don't you love it? I love it.
I can't wait. It's going in the car on the way home.
I know, right? I when I saw Merzik for the first time, very impressed. Their stage presence is awesome. Anthony definitely captivates the audience and keeps them, I don't want to say like on the edge of your seat, but I feel like when you're watching them, you're kind of like, what's he going to do? Like, you know, like he's very, very entertaining to watch. I love the live show with them.
Cool.
So highly recommend them for anybody. If you want to go see a good live show, go see Merzik. You will not be disappointed. Okay, but since you are my Halloween friend here and you love Halloween just as much as I do, and I know that you just hit your 400th movie, I just want to talk to you, I guess, about, tell me some traditions that you do on Halloween. What's something big for you that you did growing up or in your family or now that's a new tradition for you that you do for Halloween, something special?
You know, it's funny with Halloween, to many people, probably the majority of people who are really into Halloween, it's they're very into the costumes, and yes, with, and that is great.
That's
and I think that, and for me, it's more like, the costumes are great and I enjoy that, but I do feel like there is a specific like vibe that mm-hmm. Halloween has, yep, and I almost rather like lay back and just like take in the vibe, you know, and I like being outside if I can be on Halloween. And this year I'm really excited because it's my first year since the seventh grade, I think, that I'm going to get to go trick-or-treating because of my son.
Yes.
So that's going to be really, really fun. My tradition back on the East Coast, I'm from New England, you mm-hmm. know, which as I know you are, which is a big reason why we're so into Halloween.
It is true. And people don't understand the difference here to back home is drastic.
Because the feeling, it's not in the air. Like yes. I still try to take in as much as like the Halloween, like night sky as I can here, but it isn't quite the same.
Yeah.
And
also we're very close to Salem.
Well, that's what I used to do is it was the perfect thing for me. My kind of tradition, kind of not when I was little, but like, my buddy and I would drive down to Salem and just kind of, again, for me, it wasn't so much about the costume. I used to like to just kind of walk around and just like feel it.
Yeah,
you know,
get the vibe of everything.
And soak it in. And then we'd go early, so it wasn't like crazy
right.
yet, you know. And then we would drive back to, it's funny, we lived in Salem, New Hampshire. So it's the Salem to Salem, you know. So we'd drive to Salem, Mass, and then go back to Salem, New Hampshire, because they're only about 40 minutes
yeah.
away from each other. And then just go and watch like horror movies, you know, and just chill out and watch horror movies. So
awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's just there is that certain just vibe in October, and I just really love all the imagery. And I just got this, I've been looking for it forever on eBay, hoping someone might have one, but and I finally found this thing my mom had when we were little, and I don't know if she lost it or it got broken, but it's this like ceramic pumpkin with with these like mice in it. There's like a mouse on the top, and it's like a candy dish kind of. You
okay.
open up, but there's holes. And the one that I got from eBay, it's like virtually the same one, except it's a light. So there's a light that you plug it in, and there's like a mouse like laying in the mouth of the jack-o'-lantern, and it just, I don't know. I just love all the old Halloween
decorations. I miss the old Halloween decorations too, because they're not the same as they. Because when you think about, like, I mean, you can look around and obviously I go and decorate and I do that stuff, but I remember being a kid and my mom always had a mixture of what I kind of called the old and the new, where mm-hmm. she would have these like really nice ceramic like pumpkin things that she would take out and like, you know, ornate, like really yeah. nice things, but then she would have like this cardboard cutout of Frankenstein. Yeah,
yeah,
really kitschy. And
no,
like,
I love all that stuff. I love, the really old Halloween stuff. I just got this really neat cat, like cardboard, exactly what you're talking about. One of the ears is missing. It's like a cardboard cat, but then it has that, I don't know what you call it, you know, the paper that's like, you take it out and it kind of folds around. It's like a, tissue papery material, but it makes this pattern, so it makes it 3D.
I know exactly.
It's like ruffles.
It's like in that diamonds, right? Is that what you're talking about?
And you and it folds back in.
Yes, it's
and
like
so
a
I,
fan.
I just got one of those, I think,
thing.
From like the 60s or 70s.
Cool.
And, you know, but I love the stuff from the 80s too, like all that stuff. There's that what's like the popcorn, almost like waxy looking stuff that
I know
would go
what you
on
mean.
The wall.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
So I don't know. It's funny because I, as much as I love Halloween, for me, it's very personal and it's very, you know, hanging out with your friends and putting yourself in a situation that really feels like October and like Halloween.
Because for me, when I was growing up in Salem, like I've always been into costumes. That's always been a thing for me and my family. Like my mom was amazing.
What are you going to be this year?
This year I have two costumes.
That's it? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, actually, it's funny.
These
I usually
years
do like
you used to post like
yeah.
four.
Yeah. It really kind of depends, I guess, on what happens this weekend and throughout the week next week. But I have two major costumes planned. I am going to redo. I did Medusa about 10 years ago. And I made like this whole ornate skirt and everything for her. The paint job I did and my hair and all that, I did not like. So 10 years have gone by and I am going to recreate my original Medusa.
Awesome.
And then for actual Halloween night, I am going to be Ursula.
Cool.
Yes. So I'm in the process of making her tentacles now.
Right.
Because that's that for
and
me.
Then you
I
should
think.
Be half and half, so you'll have the snakes on top. And
oh my God!
On the
someone
bottom.
Asked me about that. They were like, "You should just do both because it's like your reptile anyway. You'll be reptile, amphibian, whatever." I'm like, "No."
It's fun. Actually, I do like how I think this year isn't the West Hollywood thing on a Friday?
No, Saturday.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought I just read that it was on Friday. So I was like, oh, well, that's good because then people can go party Friday night and then Saturday. Really?
No, it's on Halloween night. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I looked it up just to double check because it's on my events calendar, which we'll be getting to in a minute. But yeah, for me, Halloween has always been like it's so much, I guess. It's all encompassing for me. But what I really do take pride in is making my own costumes.
Cool.
Like, even
that's the thing. I think that's why I'm not as into it is because I feel like
right.
I never have the time to be as creative as I want to be.
Right.
Because I want it to be like, if I did something, have it to be like super awesome.
Yeah,
and I'm always
I just
like
feel
lazy
like even
with
if
it.
I have an idea and you can buy it in the store, I still feel no matter what I'm going to do is going to look better than what you can buy in the store just because I'm
right.
putting
totally.
More effort into it. And I'm not just like making like the same cutout per se for
right.
every person to wear.
Right.
I tried to do the best I could do,
right.
you know, with materials that I found and make my own costume and, you know, things like that. I just think it gives it more and more mm-hmm. flair, more a uniqueness. You know, no one's going to walk down the street and have your same costume.
Right.
So that's a really big plus. All right. I have to get into right now my events that are coming up for this week of Halloween. I tried to gear most of them towards that, but I threw my music in here as well because, you know, I have to do that.
Yeah.
So for all of you party goers and people who want to go out and see what's happening on the scene, these are some things that I found for you that you might want to check out. So Sunday the 25th at the Echoplex, they have Booty LA and they're spinning mashups for Halloween and there is a big costume contest. $200 cash prize, winna. Chicken dinner, if that's what you want to buy with your $200. And like I say every episode, every Wednesday, check out Rock Karaoke at Skinny's Lounge in North Hollywood, presented by Scum Love. You can get up there and you can sing. You can play the drums. You can play bass or guitar. Sign up for whatever you want. It's your choice. It's Rock Karaoke at its finest. And this week, please come. You're dressed best for Halloween. Because that's what's going to happen that Wednesday. And then Thursday the 29th at St. Felix in Hollywood. If you want to see my Medusa in person, that's where I will be. They're having a huge Halloween ball with live bands and a costume contest. And then Friday the 30th at the Whiskey A Go-Go, my friends in Fear Factory are going to be playing. And they're featuring my boys in Dark Sun. And they are making their debut return to the Whiskey A Go-Go to blow you away. So make sure that you guys get out there and go check them out and support live music. And then on Halloween night, as we talked about, go head down to the West Hollywood Carnival. It goes from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. They have vendors, bands, and, of course, costumes. Hello, costumes galore. Like, that's really, like, the big thing. And that's located at Santa Monica Boulevard between Doheny and La Cienega. So those are some things for you guys to go check out. I hope that you go do something.
Yeah.
Well, that's all my time. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
For coming and being here and thanks. Chatting with me all about your amazing musical powers that you've had done. I mean, my God, Michael, I'm so proud of you. Everything
that
you've accomplished.
And please, yeah, definitely check out my new, I just had my website totally redesigned. It's just michaeltioli.com. And I'm trying to get everything else going too. Like I have a Michael Tioli Music Facebook page and I'm on Twitter now. And, you know, so definitely like me there or follow me there. I'm going to get my things right there, you know, just at Michael Tioli. And I just started a SoundCloud too. So I never really, you know, got into that before. So, you know, I'm trying to get it all going and connected and whatnot.
And like we said too, you can go onto your website and that will get you also links to be able to buy the Nishima soundtrack.
Yeah, that'll get you everywhere.
Yes.
There's a whole bar at the top.
And I did like that you have your Twitter page set up with your homepage so you can see everything that's going on. I thought that was really smart of you to combine those two things there.
Thank you. And I also, I took a influence from you this year for, cause you do your song of the day.
Yes.
So this year for October, I've been doing a song of the day. I think I do like the 31 songs of Halloween.
Oh, I've
day.
Been doing all Halloween songs too.
Yeah.
Are you doing like actual, like mine are just like kind of like Halloween based. Like,
I think based, they have to be, to me, they have to like evoke.
Yeah, like I had like Season of the Witch as one of mine, like in like Love Potion number 9 was one of them, like the other day, because you know it's all about like something that could be in that realm.
Totally.
So, yeah, and then that kind of stuff. You know, of course, you know, Shout at the Devil went down to Georgia. You know, like those kind of things. So,
right.
Trying to keep it in the realm of everything. I'm not going to tell you what my Halloween song will be. We'll see if we match up with that one.
Okay.
We'll see what happens there.
Right.
But. There's only one obvious one to play on Halloween night.
Okay.
We'll see what you pick. Well, thank you so much for being here with me, Michael. I really had a lot of fun. And thank you for sharing all of your fun Halloween stuff. I want to go to the next Sacred Fools event, the Hamlet Experience. I would love to.
Yeah, that's going
to
be next June. Yeah, excellent. And they have a whole season two that they're always going, so they always have shows there, so you should definitely check them out, sacredfools.org.
Perfect.
Yeah,
I love it. And guys, don't forget, check out my band of the episode, Murzik. You can do that at murzik.com. that's M-U-R-S-I-C, kind of like music but with an R. And they're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of that jazz. And Michael, you get to take home a CD with you because you won it.
That's
on
right.
My show. What all right, guys, I'm Jess Fema. This has been In Your Ear. And remember, create your own universe. See ya.